TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness. Rising sea levels, the causes, the data, and a look into the future. NASA, the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, has over 20 years of data on sea level rise in the oceans of the world. They give regular public updates, and today you will hear from four of their scientists. They reported in a teleconference in August 2015. These conferences are also posted on YouTube, but never seem to go viral, although what is being said is already changing our lives. When you come to my website at tucradio.org, you can click at the link of that conference and also see the few graphs that were used to illustrate these data. For example, the first speaker, Michael Freilich, director of NASA's Earth Science Division, gave an overview of the satellite systems that NASA is using. They are getting precise numbers of both sea level rise and the melting of the world's ice sheets and glaciers. Sea level has been studied by Topex Poseidon since 1992 and continued by JASON 1 and JASON 2. They bounce radar off the ocean surface to determine height and found that sea level increased on average 3.2 millimeter per year over the last 23 years. That's about 2 3/4 inches in less than a generation. Another set of satellites has determined where the water is coming from that is raising sea levels. A pair of satellites called GRACE, launched in 2002, is measuring the thickness of the ice sheets and glaciers. GRACE shows that Greenland lost 0.74 millimeter per year, while Antarctica lost 0.25 millimeter per year since 2002. Steve Narum, lead of NASA's sea level change team, will explain in a moment the rising graphs of accelerating melt that show the matching transfer of volume from the ice sheets into the oceans. He will also refer to two other factors that lead to ocean rise: thermal expansion of the water mass due to global warming contributes 1/3 of sea level rise, and shockingly, another third is coming from the melting of the inland glaciers, many of which we know by name and are grateful to for their contribution to the hydrology on land that is essential for our rivers, food, and life. Here's a slightly edited version of the August 26, 2015 NASA teleconference with important information on sea level rise. Steve Cole is introducing the speakers.
This is Steve Cole from NASA's Office of Communications in Washington, D.C. We're here today to discuss global sea level rise. Our panel of experts will be giving you an up-to-date outlook on current conditions, what the latest science is telling us, and what NASA is doing to improve our understanding of this complex issue. We have three experts on sea level rise science to talk with you today. First will be Steve Narum, lead for NASA's sea level change team at the University of Colorado in Boulder, Eric Rignot, glaciologist at the University of California, Irvine, and NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory, and Josh Willis, climate scientist, also at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory in California. We're going to start with opening remarks from Mike Freilich, who is director of the Earth Science Division here at NASA headquarters. Over to you, Mike.
Thanks, Steve. Good afternoon to all of you. Thanks for joining us. Sea level rise is one of the most visible signatures of our changing climate, and rising seas have profound impacts on our nation, our economy, and all of humanity. More than 150 million people, most of them in Asia, live within 1 meter of present sea level. Many more people are threatened by storm surges and extreme coastal phenomena whose impacts are made even worse when the events are superimposed on higher sea levels. Sea level rise will measurably change the shape of our coastline, especially in low-lying states such as Florida. It may entirely eliminate some Pacific island nations, and sea level rise will greatly impact low-lying major cities like Dhaka, Bangladesh, Singapore, and Tokyo. Indeed, even today, normal spring high tides cause street flooding in sections of Miami, something that didn't happen regularly just a few decades ago. Thanks to precision global spaceborne measurements that have been acquired by us at NASA and our partners since 1992, we now know with some certainty that global mean sea levels have been increasing at a rate of more than 3 millimeters per year. These measurements from satellite-mounted instruments called altimeters are amazing feats of NASA technology and science. Not only can we track global average sea level changes, but we also know that some geographical regions are experiencing much greater rates of change and rises, and some regions, sea level is falling systematically. So what you're going to hear from my colleagues today is that by combining spaceborne direct measurements of sea level with a host of other measurements from satellites and from sensors in the oceans themselves, NASA scientists are not only tracking changes in ocean heights, but are also determining the reasons for these changes. We're developing quantitative understanding of how much global mean sea level rise results from thermal expansion of a warming ocean, and how much results from adding water to the ocean by melting landbound ice sheets and glaciers. We're understanding why sea level is falling rather than rising in some places, and we're constructing models to predict sea level changes in the coming decades and centuries under a variety of different assumed climate regimes. Today, we're really in a challenging and exciting time. Thanks to spaceborne and other monitoring programs that have been instituted over the past two decades, we have sufficient data in hand to describe in some detail how sea level has evolved over the last human generation or so. These multi-decadal data sets also serve as an excellent testbed for theories and models that purport to describe why sea level changes in time and in space. As you'll hear, NASA and our interagency and international partners have many new satellite missions that we'll be launching in the next few years. The effects and the impacts of changing sea level are being felt now in our country and throughout the world. And if the recent past is prologue, the challenges and opportunities associated with changing sea level will become even more important during the lifetimes of our children and our grandchildren. And now I'd like to turn it over to Steve Neerham.
Thanks, Mike. The main points I want to make today are that, first, the data show that sea level is rising faster than it was 50 years ago, and it's very likely to get worse in the future. In fact, it's already impacting some low-lying areas. And the biggest uncertainty for predicting future sea level rise is determining how quickly the polar ice sheets will melt in response to warming. And that's just a very difficult problem. But we do have NASA satellite measurements that are telling us with great accuracy how much sea level is rising and what the causes are. And so an interdisciplinary team of scientists are using these data from NASA to better understand the dynamics of large ice sheets and how they respond to a warming planet and how this will affect future sea level rise where you live. Let's get a little deeper into the points that Mike discussed. So first, the record of global mean sea level started in 1992 with Topex Poseidon and has been continued by JASON 1 and JASON 2. So these satellites use precise radars to bounce signals off the ocean surface in order to determine the height of the ocean or sea level. So when these measurements are averaged globally, you get the curve you see there, the red line, and these show that sea level, when averages globally is increasing at a rate of about 3.2 millimeters per year over the last 23 years, with an incredible accuracy really better than 0.5 millimeters per year. Now, we also have another curve on this figure 1, which is from the GRACE mission. GRACE was launched in 2002, and it gives us further insight into what is causing the observed sea level change that we've seen in the altimetry. So GRACE consists of two satellites orbiting the Earth together. They're about 450 kilometers in altitude, but 200 kilometers apart. And there's a microwave ranging system on board that measures the distance between the satellites to very high precision, about 1 micron, which is smaller than the diameter of a red blood cell. So it's really quite an achievement. And as the satellites orbit the Earth, the distance between the satellites changes as ice and water move around on the Earth. And so we measure those changes and then analyze the data to get changes in mass on the surface of the Earth, and I'll show you those results now. And they show that ocean mass has been increasing at a rate of about 1.9 millimeters per year. So by ocean mass, I mean this is changes due to water being added or taken away from the oceans. In this case, the mass is increasing, so water is being added to the oceans. GRACE can look not only at the oceans, but it can also look at the land to tell us where the water is coming from. And in this case, we're showing GRACE estimates of mass change, mass loss in Greenland and Antarctica. The mass loss there since 2002 when GRACE was launched is about 0.25 millimeters per year for Antarctica and 0.74 millimeters per year for Greenland. So together with these NASA satellite measurements, satellite altimetry, and satellite gravity measurements, we can conclude that roughly one-third of the rise of sea level that we see is due to thermal expansion. That's basically when heat goes into the ocean, the water expands just like the mercury in a thermometer does. And one-third is due to the ice melt in Greenland and Antarctica. And then one-third is due to the melting of mountain glaciers outside of Greenland and Antarctica. So we've already experienced about 0.8 degrees centigrade of warming, and paleoclimate research suggests sea level will rise about 2.3 meters for every degree centigrade of warming. But we're uncertain how quickly the ice sheets will melt, so we need to better understand ice sheet dynamics, and Eric Rignot and Josh Willis will address this in a minute. So I've been focusing here on NASA satellite measurements. I'd really like to summarize not only the ones I talked about, but all of the measurements that are helping contribute to understanding sea level change and what's going to happen in the future. So I talked about satellite gravity. We have the GRACE mission that launched in 2002. Also, NASA's planning on launching the GRACE follow-on mission in 2017 that will continue those measurements. For ocean altimetry, we've had TOPEX, JASON-1, JASON-2, and hopefully JASON-3 will launch in 2016 to continue that time series. In addition, NASA is developing the SWAT mission for launch in 2020 that will measure sea level across a wide swath of the oceans, 120 kilometers wide. Plus, we have ice altimetry, ISAT, and soon in 2018, ISAT-2 will continue measurements of the height of the ice sheets, how it tells us what is contributing to sea level change. So just to finish up, I'd like to mention that in 2014, NASA formed a new sea level change team that I'm the lead of that's composed of an interdisciplinary team of scientists with expertise in glaciology, hydrology, oceanography, geophysics, and a variety of other fields. And you need all these fields, as you might expect from what I've been talking about here, to actually understand all of the factors that affect future sea level rise. So the primary objective of this team is to improve our knowledge of ice mass loss and regional sea level change so we can better predict future sea level change and its regional variations. Later this year, the team will introduce a web portal containing research from the team, but another excellent source for sea level information can be found at the URL climate.data.gov. So now, Eric Rignot and Josh Willis are both members of this new team, so I'd like to pass this off to them so they can give their perspective on the briefing today. Eric?
Hi, thank you, Steve. We're going to turn our attention a little bit on ice sheets. Ice sheets are contributing to sea level rise sooner and more significantly than anticipated. As Steve said, about one-third of the observed global sea level rise is due to the melting of ice sheets into the ocean. We know that with future warming, ice sheets will dominate sea level rise because they hold a much larger volume of ice than glaciers and ice caps. Paleoclimate records suggest very clearly that with future warming, we may lock ourselves into multiple meter sea level rise. We're talking about 6 meters, 18 feet and higher of sea level rise. As Steve mentioned, the timescales of this rise is not well constrained by those records. Sea level may rise half a meter per century or several meters per century. We just don't know. More research is needed to constrain those rates from past events. We've never seen an ice sheet collapse in the past. We do not know what it looks like. And past records of collapse of marine-based ice sheets have been bulldozed by re-advances. How ice sheets melt into the ocean? They melt in three different ways. One is from the surface due to warmer air temperature. This is the case in Greenland and for glaciers and ice cap. They also melt from below when ice enters in contact with ocean waters. And the third way is from the periphery when glaciers break up into icebergs that melt and decay in the ocean. That's the important process in Greenland and Antarctica. Surface melt is well understood and is projected to increase with future warming. Several NASA teams work in the field every summer to look at the fate of surface melt on and below the ice sheet and how this influences the ice sheet mass balance. Next month, NASA Operation IceBridge will fly over Greenland to measure how much melt took place this summer in various parts of Greenland. We will cover various ranges of elevation, snow and ice regimes to characterize the changes over the entire ice sheet. So this data will inform us about the magnitude of the 2015 summer melt, so we can compare it with satellite data, we can evaluate our surface melt models, and this also is done in preparation for the data to be collected by ICESat-2 to be launched in 2018. ICESat-2 will continue its observations pole to pole on a continuous basis. In contrast to surface melt, the mechanisms of fast ice melt into the ocean when ice is in contact with the ocean and the breaking up of calving cliffs into icebergs are not well understood. They're not well represented in models and therefore affected by large uncertainties. This is why current model projections, such as IPCC projections, which represent the state of the art in modeling, produce relatively conservative scenarios of ice sheet decay, because those models do not yet include the mechanism of fast melt in the ocean and fast ice fracture into the ocean that would prevail during area of rapid or catastrophic ice sheet retreat. So to reduce these uncertainties, NASA is supporting research on multiple fronts. NASA is deploying airborne instruments to measure glacier depths and the shape of sub-ice shelf cavities in Greenland and Antarctica. This is the IceBridge program, which is scheduled to last until at least 2019. We use satellite to observe changes in mass, surface elevation, and speed of the glaciers, and more satellites will be launched, as Steve mentioned, to continue these observations into the next decades. To improve our understanding of ice-ocean interaction, several programs have been launched, including the Ocean Melting Greenland mission that Josh Willis will talk about in a minute. And eventually, this knowledge will be transferred into more reliable ice-ocean-atmosphere coupled models, which are developed by a growing community of climate modelers. Numerical models need to be run at a much higher vertical and horizontal resolution than today. They need to use better boundary conditions than available today in order to simulate the full complexity of ice sheet systems. We are not there yet, but NASA and other agencies are contributing to making this happen sooner rather than later. Observations combined with observations from partner agencies clearly indicate that significant changes are taking place today on ice sheets. A number of these changes have an irreversible character, meaning it would take centuries to reverse the trend of ice retreat or recover some ice elements that have been lost. I'm thinking about, in particular, about the progressive collapse of ice shelves in the Antarctic Peninsula, which is still ongoing and moving southward, the irreversible retreat of the glaciers in the Amundsen Sea sector of West Antarctica that we talked about in May 2014. This is still ongoing, although we are witnessing a slight pause in the rate of retreat of some of these glaciers. The retreat is proceeding inland. Or the fast retreat of the largest ice stream in Greenland, the Jakobshavn Isbrae. Just a few weeks ago, we witnessed a spectacular calving event of Jakobshavn Isbrae in Greenland, which removed 12 square kilometers of ice in one day and pushed the calving front of that glacier farther back than ever before. The glacier keeps retreating rapidly into a deep canyon. We are likely to see more of those calving events in the coming years as the glacier retreats into deeper ice. This is a marine-based glacier. It will remain in contact with the ocean for decades and centuries as it retreats farther inland. And it contains enough ice to raise global sea level by half a meter. This is just one glacier in Greenland, once all melted to sea. So in summary, there are large uncertainties about the timescale of sea level rise associated with the decay of ice sheets. The rates of sea level rise could range from the lower bound of IPCC projection to its upper range and beyond if we include extreme scenarios of fast ice breakup and rapid retreat analog to those experienced in prior warmer periods. Our observations suggest that we should be very cautious to conclude too soon that conservative scenarios are reasonable. They may not be. And this is at the heart of what we, NASA, and other national and international agencies are working on right now. And now I'll pass it on to Josh.
Thank you, Eric. As Eric mentioned, I am the lead scientist for a new mission to measure oceans and their impact on the Greenland ice sheet. We started this year. The name of the mission is called Oceans Melting Greenland, or OMG for short. And before you ask, yes, I did pick that name while I was deleting old texts off my cell phone. The Oceans Melting Greenland campaign will measure oceans and ice loss around the edges of Greenland for the next 5 years, starting next year and continuing through 2020. We'll be collecting observations. These include radar measurements of the height of the ice near the edges, right where it comes into contact with the water. These glaciers drain the ice sheet into the oceans. And as the oceans warm, the impact of the warming water can be felt right at the ice edge. So in addition, OMG will also collect observations of the ocean directly using expendable probes that are dropped out of an aircraft. And these will continue to be collected through 2020. But we also need to understand the troughs and canyons underneath the water, which allow the warm ocean water to reach up to the glaciers. In Greenland and in most of the waters surrounding it, the ocean actually has warm water underneath cold water. The warm water is salty, so it's heavier, and it sits down at depth. So it has to reach into these canyons carved into the continental shelf by ancient glaciers in order to reach the glaciers and interact with them. So OMG is actually also collecting two different kinds of data to map the shape and depth of the sea floor. Right now, we have just completed the very first phase of a shipborne campaign, which carries a multi-beam echo sounder, which sweeps out measurements of depth along the sea floor. Some of the very early data from this campaign collected in a fjord called Uminak, which carries a great deal of ice off of the glacier, off of the ice sheet, and into the water. And we now have a much better idea of how the pathways by which this warm water can reach up next to the glaciers and cause increased melting there. So OMG is looking to measure both the ocean warming and the ice melt over the course of the next 5 years and try and determine just how much the Greenland ice sheet is being melted away at the edges by the ocean. Now, Steve earlier talked about sea level rise, and we also heard from Mike Freilich about how we've been measuring sea level rise over the past 23 years using precision altimeters. In addition to my work on OMG, I'm also the project scientist for the JASON 3 mission, which we hope to launch sometime later this year or early next year, as we work out the details of how to get back to space with SpaceX. The animation shown in Figure 10 actually shows the amount of sea level rise that's occurred over the last 22 years as observed by satellite altimeters. And you'll see that almost everywhere in the ocean is orange or red, indicating a rise. And this rise has been about 7 centimeters over the last 22 years. However, if you look in more detail, there are regions around the planet where sea level is not actually rising but has fallen or has risen much more quickly than the global average. This is caused for a variety of reasons, and it's one of the main concerns of oceanographers studying sea level change using the satellite altimeter data. The satellite altimeter shows us the complex nature of the sea level problem in places like the North Atlantic, where as the globe spins around, you'll see a large warming and cooling, or high sea level and low sea level, surrounding either side of the Gulf Stream as it veers off of the United States East Coast and carries warm water across the Atlantic. This actually occurs because of a change in either the strength or location of the Gulf Stream, which affects sea level on the long term. Other phenomena, such as the Pacific Decadal Oscillation, which is a large scale, very long time scale phenomenon in the Pacific Ocean, which rearranges heat and causes sea levels to rise more quickly in some places than others, this can be seen off the west coast of the United States, where sea levels have actually fallen for the last 22 years on average. Now, the Pacific Decadal Oscillation is thought to be part of a natural cycle occurring in the Pacific Ocean. So in the long run, we expect the sea levels on the west coast to catch up to the global mean and probably even exceed the global mean. So we could be looking at much faster than average sea level rise on the United States west coast sometime in the next 20 or so years.
That was Josh Willis, oceanographer at NASA's Jet Propulsion Lab in Pasadena, California. He's lead scientist of OMG, Oceans Melting Greenland, that began work in 2015. Josh Willis took part in a NASA teleconference on August 26, 2015. The goal was to present and explain sea level rise. You heard before him Eric Vigneault, glaciologist at the University of California, Irvine, and the Jet Propulsion Lab in Pasadena, Steve Narum, lead of NASA Sea Level Change Team at the University of Colorado, Boulder, and Michael Freilich, director of NASA's Earth Science Division. The link to that NASA conference is posted at tucradio.org, and you can see the few graphs that were used to illustrate these data. Come back for more information on climate change when TUC Radio returns. You can hear this program again for free on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. Open the newest programs page and scroll down. This program was produced off the grid with solar power. TUC Radio is free to all radio stations and free as podcast online. This is an unfunded program that depends entirely on donations by listeners. You can contact TUC Radio online at tucradio.org. The email is tuc@tucradio.org. My name is Maria Gelarden. Thank you for listening. Give us a call.